these gated, very wealthy areas, gated community, where they had kicked out all the residents and given the houses over to all the heads of government. Margaret Thatcher and Hawke wanted to get together for a chat. So I had a call from Margaret Thatcher's policeman, who I knew extremely well, and he said, "Oh, look, you know, my boss and your boss want to get together." He said, "But I don't want to do it formally, or they don't want the press to know. So what I'm going to do is come round with Margaret in the car, and if you'd like to jump in the front with me and get your Prime Minister in the back, we'll drive around for a while so that I can have a chat." And we did. It was a really interesting conversation, which I won't repeat. Those are the sorts of informal things. But it was, you know, two security services, ours and the Brits, getting the job done in the safest way possible, in a way that, you know, both prime ministers wanted it to happen. So, you know, I mean, that's the way things happen. You couldn't do that with a US president.
Providing that personal protection for the prime minister in that sense, was the role in principle something more like that of a bodyguard, or were there limits to the risk that you were supposed to take to carry out that duty?
No, the bodyguarding function was 10% of the work. And that's why we preferred to be referred to as protection officers. The job is all about planning and advancing places, knowing where you're going, making your plans, having contingencies in place if anything goes wrong. If you need to use if you need to become physical, it would mean that you haven't done your job properly in the first place. The advanced stuff hasn't been done properly. Inevitably during an election campaign, when a politician wants to press the flesh, then obviously, you know, from time to time, you know, there's a bit of push and shove goes on, especially if your prime minister is as popular as Bob Hawke was when he first became prime minister. The risk being more that, you know, people are going to love him to death rather than they disliked him. Although there did come a time when he wasn't as popular as he was when he first started, and probably, although he didn't appear to be in any physical danger, one of the most confronting things I've ever had was walking out onto the MCG at the end of a grand final, AFL grand final, with 100,000 people, and he was going to present the cup to the winning team. And as we walked out on the MCG, it seemed, which is a pretty intimidating place when there's 100,000 people in there, it seemed all 100,000 people were booing us. And it was the last time he ever did one of those. It quite shook him up, I think. And you know, it was just amazing. This huge, you know, 100,000 people all around you booing. Well, they seemed as though they were all booing. They obviously weren't. Sounded like it. There was this huge difference between what happened then and what, you know, the adulation he had in the early days. Pretty hard for him to take, I think, at that time.
In terms of your role as in this is Prime Minister's protection, to put it in a fairly plain speak, was it the role of your staff and of the detachment to, in a sense, throw themselves in front of the Prime Minister to take the bullet, so to speak?
Yeah, I suppose that's dramatising it in a way, but yes, that's the whole point of being there, is that that if you have to protect the person, then you have to be prepared to do it with your life if necessary. Now, as I say, that sounds dramatic, but at the end of the day, that's what it means. Mm. And I don't think any one of the people that worked for me would have done so. Without thinking, it's something you don't think about, by the way. I mean, if there looks like being a problem, you will automatically put your body in between the person you're looking after and where the threat's coming from, and that's what you automatically do. I mean, you're not expecting to get shot or punched, or, well, you might expect to get punched, and that had happened from time to time as well, but, yeah.
And take a kick.
And take a kick, yes.
Strategically placed.
Well, fortunately, mine was on the leg, if it had reached him, it wasn't on the leg.
So when you think about the role, so what thoughts do you have on the risk involved and the personal risks involved in being part of this?
I don't think we ever really thought about a personal risk. I think other people thought about it on your behalf. I think that probably would affect your family more than it did you. I just don't think that the personal risk really occurred to the people that are doing it, nor should it. But it's hard on the family. It's hard on your families. Not only is that side of it hard on the families, the amount of time you spend away from home. It is really difficult, and in fact, you know, from a personal point of view, was part of the reason that my first marriage ended after 23 years. And I can remember, I missed my kids growing up, I can remember ringing my son on his 21st birthday, and I was in Moscow and he was at home on his 21st birthday party. Those sorts of things, and it's a real, because it's a job that your family can't share it, apart from once a year at Christmas, and I might get invited to the Christmas party at the lodge, or they would get invited. I mean, there's just no role for your family to play, and although they would see you on television most nights, wherever you may be, it's very hard on, and it's not just the police job, any job working with the Prime Minister, his staff, and all that. It takes a big toll on the families.
Did any of your team ever, crack up under the strain, or decide that they really weren't cut out for this kind of work?
No, none of the people I had working for me, but they were pretty carefully selected in the first place, and were all known, were all well known to me. There would be people, that came into the whole area, that might find that they weren't. And in fact, I it was my decision to stop. Having mentioned a bit of my personal life, I remarried in 1989, and I had two, and I inherited two young stepdaughters. And at that time, shortly after I got married, I decided, although my wife worked with visiting VIPs, not in the police role, but in the protocol role, and knew what the job was about, exactly what it was about, I decided that there was no way I was going to put the family through what I put my first family through, and so I did the 1990 election campaign, and then decided that I'd done enough travelling around the world and spent enough time away from home, and so I decided that somebody else should inherit my job, and I left. So that was my decision, rather than anybody else's,
the stress it put on your family life than perhaps the personal risks you took in carrying out the job.
Yeah. It was a much bigger sacrifice for the family than it was for you. Mm. I mean, you were always there. You always got the adrenaline running. And anybody said there's always a buzz working with somebody like a prime minister, you know, the power that they come in and working, you know, and being there when all, you know, so many important things are happening, you know, when history is changing, all that sort of thing. There's a real buzz about that, that only the people that are there, you know.
How did you manage to unwind and to, in a sense, to recharge the batteries in these circumstances?
Go home and put your feet up, which in itself was, you know, again, probably wasn't fair on the family. But the last thing you wanted to do, having been running around the countryside or an election campaign, living in 5-star hotels and eating hotel food, was to go out to dinner when you got home. You probably just want to go home, have a plate of beans on toast and go to bed. And, you know, so you know, you so, oh, yeah, I mean, you unwind, I mean, you've got your own interests and that sort of thing when you can find time.
Yeah. It's a general question. From your perspective, how important do you think protection was in the life of the prime ministers of that era that you served? How important was their protection and the security?
I think all the people that I worked with, really it was only from Malcolm Fraser onwards, would saw it as really quite important. They were aware of the risks. There's no doubt about that. They're all aware of the risk to themselves, because of their policies. They appreciated, and I think they did, all of them. Certainly, know John Howard did as well. Subsequently, they appreciated what the police did for them. If, for instance, I mean, not just my team, but police generally can always get things done. If you want to change your plans, or if you want to do something personal, or you want to know something, or you want to see somebody, who do you go to get you there quickly or to organise it? And it's policemen, because that's what they're good at doing. So they will know, you know, Prime Minister say, oh, look, you know, I really want to go. We were in Ireland and he wanted to go and visit an Irish pub. He didn't drink, and he didn't drink when he was Prime Minister, and I can vouch for that fact. A lot of people don't believe it, but he didn't. If anybody ever saw him drinking a beer, it was a non-alcoholic one imported from Germany. But he wanted to go and visit an Irish pub. Well, who would you go to organise a visit to an Irish pub? You go to the Garda in Dublin and say, you know, which is the best one, the safest one for us to go to. And so we went, and you know, and that happened all over the world, you know, that if you want something done, or if you wanted to do, was interested in something, you say, oh, go and ask your mates, or go and ask the cops if we can do this, and they get it done, then they do it, and they'd love it. And So, but from their own safety point of view, yes, they all understood without a doubt the importance of it.
Even someone like Hawk, who was such a presser of the flesh and
even
wanted
more,
to be, as you say,
so.
In the pub.
Even more so, Bob Hawke.
Was he very, he was more conscious?
I'd say so. He was extremely, because he was so popular, he understood that there was a risk of being popular. And so, yeah, he would not do anything without us. And trusted us totally. That was the other thing, with this huge trust with Hawke. That whatever he wanted to do, it's personal things that the Prime Minister might want to do. He doesn't want anybody else to know about. you know, just ordinary personal, quite legitimate, quite things that, that he doesn't want the press knowing about, or doesn't necessarily want staff knowing about. So he just called you to one side and said, oh, you know, can I do this? Can I, you know, I want to go here. I want to do this, but I don't, you know, I don't particularly want to have the world to know about it. And it's like, yeah, we'll take you in our car. You know, we don't even bother to use your official car. You know, just jump in the plainclothes police car with us and we'll go and do it. And you did, and that's the way it is. And that's the way it would be for all of them. And you know, I don't want that misconstrued that he went to do things that, you know, they wasn't allowed to do or shouldn't have done. That's not what I'm saying. I mean, it's like wanting to go to a casino, for instance, which is a quite legitimate thing to do and things he did quite often. But he didn't want the whole world to know that he was going, you know, to play blackjack in a casino. So he would just go with us and we might go in the police car and...
From a lay point of view, it was some of this puts him, that would be fairly heavy, high risk type activities for a prime minister.
No, in what way? I'm not sure.
Well, he's exposed to his, there's no one knows who's going to be there and what you're doing.
Yeah, well, the fact that nobody knows who's going to be there makes him safer. If you do things impromptu, then nobody can plan anything. They don't know. And you know, at a casino we'd always use the private rooms, so that, you know, you weren't out, you know, in the public areas with the drunks or whatever. Yeah, we used to spend a lot of time, you know, his horse racing, his great passion was the races. But they were hard work, I can tell you. I mean, I'm not a great horse racing fan, but you know, you'd go to the race course, you'd, you know, go up into the committee area, because they were hosting, because he was the Prime Minister, and then all of a sudden you'd say, go on, we're off, and you'd rush down and you'd go and talk to the jockeys and go and look at the horses, and then go back upstairs, and then you'd go down again and go to the bookies, and it was really interesting times, but that was his great relaxation. Two great relaxations were horse racing and going to the casino if he could for a few hours.
And through it all, he and Malcolm Fraser both had a higher, took security and personal protection, they took it very seriously.
Absolutely.
In your view.
And I know John Howard did, because I knew Howard quite well. And I assume the current Prime Minister does as well. I mean, you know, be mad if he didn't. It's a very important part of his entourage, I can tell you.
Roger, I don't think we're going to finish today, so I think we might have have another session.
Absolutely, that's fine with me.
You know. We might call it quits at this point?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.